As a storyteller, my desire is to incubate audiences, to make sure that my audiences are having a wonderful time. And I think brands are better served if they do that as well.
Branding, experience, conversation, promotion. Powerful marketing. Empowering small business to change their status quo. It's the Internet Show, all about small business marketing. Jay Arrett hosts the brightest minds in marketing. Power, power to the power. Small business.
And that opening blurb is from our guest, Brian Clark of GMD Studios in New York. Met Brian at the Bolo Digital Marketing Conference in Scottsdale last month. And his was the presentation that most stuck with me when I left. I think it's because it required me to process some big ideas, specifically phenomenology, which you'll hear Brian explain during the show. And a lot of what we talk about in this episode of The Big Show, number 91, by the way, is going to ask you to merge some big concepts with some practical application. We're going to merge a little bit of philosophy with experience design. So step away from the product and the service for about 25 minutes and let's dig into the meaning of your business and what stories you create for your customers. So tell me who you are. What do you do?
I'm Brian Clark, and I run an experience design shop called GMD Studios that's in New York and Orlando.
So when you say experience design, what type of experience are you talking about?
So I'm talking about human experiences. So we work in a mix of offline and traditional media and digital media, and we think about how you craft experiences for audiences and customers that use all of those channels in synergistic ways.
So I met you out in Scottsdale at the Bolo 2013 conference. It was funny. I met you that first morning. I pulled up and had breakfast and you were at the table and everybody was, oh, there's Brian. And you were talking. I had no idea you were going to give the presentation the next day because I just wasn't paying attention to the speaker list. But when I did see your presentation, it was awesome. And I said, wow. And it just kept on resonating with me after I left Scottsdale. So thanks for being on the podcast today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Let's just first explain a little bit this concept of phenomenology and phenomenal work. Give us a foundation of understanding for it, please.
Sure. So, you know, as an experienced designer, everything that I work with constantly changes, except for people. And the way people have meaningful experiences is the one constant that I can predict between a billboard and a television show and a website. So I've become more and more interested over the years over what academia has already given us as frameworks to think about how people experience the world. And so phenomenology is a school of philosophy that literally arises from the idea that the only things we know about the world and thus know about ourselves are because of things that we've experienced. So phenomenology is the study of consciousness and the things that we experience, which makes it a really interesting framework for predicting the way people experience brands or experience media objects, and raises interesting questions about where meaning comes from and why sometimes what the audience takes from a work is very different from what we think the work means as authors.
And that's so powerful, don't you think, Brian? Because we get caught up in the day-to-day operations of our business and we're selling stuff. It seems sometimes we maybe lose focus on the fact that we provide meaning to people's lives rather than just products.
Absolutely. And I think we don't do enough as an industry to cultivate that understanding. Because I think once you start thinking about the world that way, what do I do with Twitter becomes an obvious thing. It becomes, how do I make it the customer experience even more meaningful? And then the other question is, what is meaningful to them? Like at the conference presentation, I use the example all the time. If you go and read Moby Dick today, it means something very different than it did when you read it in high school. And yet the words on the page haven't changed. We've changed. So the meaning that the audience finds in something is as much of a statement about them, which means we need to fall in love with our customers. We need to fall in love with our audiences. We need to be just as interested in them as we hope they're going to be interested in us.
I know it's overused, but I looked up phenomenal in the dictionary after seeing your presentation, and rewatching it online. I'll post a link to that, by the way, in the show notes. But phenomenal meaning very remarkable or extraordinary, which as we go through our day-to-day experiences with businesses seems to be missing a lot. That's a missing ingredient in our experience.
Absolutely. And yet that's also what unlocks social sharing. Like, we don't tell the story about the ordinary things in our lives, or, you know, maybe some food bloggers on Instagram do. But most of us tell the stories about either the really good things or the really bad things, right? And so both of those are meaningful. Like, meaningful can be positive and negative. You have a bad customer experience with brand, and that's the kind of thing you share with your friends, that bad experience, because it's extraordinary. It's not just, what did I have for breakfast?
Well, one of the concepts you talk about is intentionality, when the audience extends its consciousness. So I can't explain it as well as you can, of course. Can you explain intentionality to us and why it's so important in experience design?
Like, for example, I would say intentionality is the moment that an audience is paying attention to something. It's now a center of focus inside of their experience. But everything we experience is surrounded by lots of other stuff, right? Like, I always use the example of Times Square here in New York. There's 1,000 billboards competing for your attention, but that doesn't mean you're intentionally engaging in every one of them. And so that's the moment when suddenly the audience and the thing you've made are interacting with each other. And that's the magic moment that I think we need to study. It's when our work is actually being experienced by someone that it fully fleshes out to what it is.
So you said a couple of things there. One is you didn't call them customers. You said the audience extends its consciousness. Then they're paying attention to things and they're experiencing things. And that's a different kind of perception, I think, or a different kind of approach that we have to take in dealing with our customers, that they're an audience.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it becomes natural when you start talking about all the media channels that a brand naturally plays with already. They're already doing stuff on the web, and they're doing stuff in conventional media, and a lot of them have physical spaces. So, like, even some of its media, some of its performance, but we understand that our brands are there as part of someone's life and part of a story that they're going to tell other people. If you go and see a movie and someone asks you, how was the movie? Your story generally includes what theater you saw it in, and whether the crowd was noisy or... So this idea that the things that we make exist in the context of something that an audience is engaging with, paying attention to. But I frequently use the phrase audience and customer almost as synonyms, because, like, even as a filmmaker, someone who's watching my movie bought it. They are a customer at that moment that they're an audience. And I think for brands, it's helpful to think about them as being an audience at all the moments of a customer journey,
rather than someone from just to extract some money from.
Exactly.
So how do we take this intentionality and start using it as we look at the experience design for our business?
So I think one of the most interesting concepts that you start with is this idea that the audience is actually more interesting than the brand. So brand shouldn't be the protagonist of the story. Like, you and me as customers, we find that a little rude when the brand wants it to all be about them. In reality, we know psychologically the most powerful selling device is a testimonial. When someone goes, oh, I went and saw this movie and it was awesome, that actually has a big impact on the people around them. And that means whatever that was became a part of my story. It's enabling me to tell stories to other people. And so thinking of brands that way, like, for example, I think, you know, Red Bull does a great example of that. Like, most of Red Bull's marketing isn't trying to tell you Red Bull's perspective. It's Red Bull placed in the context of some story you want to tell. Like, yeah, did you see that guy skydive down from outer space? And so finding ways for brands to be involved in those moments that collect human attention and make us into our own storytellers and sharers unlocks all of that other magic stuff that I think, especially as digital marketers, we talk about all the time, like the share and the follow. And in conventional media, you would talk about as the testimonial or as audience engagement. I think that all comes from this same moment of creating meaningfulness.
So our intention is really to get our customers, our audience, then to retell stories about their experience with our business.
Absolutely, because come on, with the story that I tell as my business about my business is less important than the story that my customers are saying about my business. And we all know that, right? A happy customer sends you more customers. So how do I make their story more meaningful, right? How do I, because they will judge my business based upon my actions. Like BP was all about telling us that they were beyond petroleum until they had an oil spill in the Gulf. And then we all sort of looked at that statement, oh yeah, we're beyond petroleum, and rolled our eyes as an audience, because we actually have more control over the meaning than they do. So how do you become a part of the stories that people are already telling to each other? The stories that make my life feel more meaningful and more special.
And you presented some research, people hearing these stories, and I think you just said it a minute ago too, people hearing these stories, they actually become participants in the stories themselves. And so it's like they're vicariously already experiencing your business before they even get to physically experience your business.
Absolutely. And like we know this now even from structural psychology. So they did an experiment where they were doing MRI scans of people's brains in several different cases. And what they found is the act of telling a story, like about yourself, and the act of hearing a story from someone else look the same in the brain as actually experiencing something. So if I ask you to smell a cup of coffee, what's happening in your brain is very similar to when you tell me a story about a cup of coffee you had. And when I'm hearing that story, what's happening in my brain looks like experiencing a cup of coffee. Like, this is just the way structurally our brains work. We use stories as proxies for our own experience. If someone tells me, hey, I ate the hamburger from Publix and I got sick, I'm probably going to avoid the hamburger at Publix, right? I'm learning from other people's experience. And that comes from us being social storytelling beings. We just spend a lot of time telling stories to each other and being interested in each other's stories.
But on the other hand, if someone tells a positive story about the business, about this magic moment that you talked about earlier, then it's like I'm experiencing that before I go to your business. And so there's a comfort level. There's this new comfort level I have with your business, even though I haven't even been there yet.
Hearing a story about a positive experience with my business, it would look in your brain very similar to having a positive experience with my business. It's remarkable the way the human mind works like this. It's the heart of empathy. Like, this is where empathy and altruism and all of these other great human attributes come from. We naturally try to put ourselves in other people's shoes. And that's why we're so obsessed by stories, even as entertainment. Because our brains are wired to find that stuff meaningful.
Okay, so this kind of throws a challenge then at the marketer and the business owners that, you know, we've got to get our customers, our audience, telling these stories. And so do we as a business owner create a story? How do we get these stories created, or how do we get people talking about or telling these stories?
Yeah, so I think there's as many different strategies as there are businesses, but I'd say they fall roughly into a few kinds of piles. One of those is enabling your employees to become storytellers. Like, we find the people who make the stuff that we like interesting. So let them out. Let them tell and talk about that. The traditional corporate culture has been, no, that's all non-disclosure agreement. I'm not allowed to talk what I do at work. And yet in reality, those are the kinds of stories that people find fascinating. On another front, brands should be looking at their customers and seeing what meaningful experiences they're already having and amplify them. Because I guarantee you right now, someone is saying something about our brands on Twitter. Right? And how do we find the examples that where the experience that they're having is exactly the one that we want them to have? And then how do we elevate that? Because we know from marketing that that will be successful. That's a testimonial. And then on the third front, there's stories that tell something about what we have in common with our customers. Like, I think Ben & Jerry's is a great example of a brand that does that. They make ice cream, but what they share in common with their customers is something about the ethos of how you treat the world and how you treat nature. And like, the storytelling that Ben & Jerry's does most effectively is when they take that and rub it up against, you know, popular culture. Like when they do a Stephen Colbert flavor of ice cream, right? Because they're saying, hey, we like Stephen Colbert, and we bet our customers do too. And look, here we're sort of now telling a story about something else that we have in common. So I think those are the three main strategies. There are all kinds of other ways to do it. I mean, advertising has tried to do that by creating a brand as a voice, which I think works, but frequently comes off as inhuman. Like, might not be as effective as just letting the real people in your company talk to the real customers.
So a couple of things come to my mind as you said that, Brian. And the first is, this seems like it's going to take a lot of communication with the customer, that you need to be in contact with the customer, you need to be in communication and understand your customer a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. But so I can tell you, like, I live in New York City, and I think most people's impression of New York City is it's one gigantic city. Mm. In reality, it's a gigantic patchwork of small neighborhoods. And I've lived in the same area of the Lower East Side now for 5 years. And so I have no doubt, if I went to the grocery store today and went through the checkout line and then discovered that I'd forgotten my wallet, the grocery store would be like, yeah, no problem, just get us next time. Because they've seen me come in 1,000 times. Like, they know I'm not going to stop coming in. And so that's the way business people used to understand their customers, that intimately. Like, I know I can trust this customer more than this person that I don't recognize. And I think as we tried to build scale for businesses into national businesses, we lost part of that human connection. But the good news is digital technology lets us reclaim that again. Lets us hear and experience more of our customers that we might not have had geographical proximity with. So it's going to get better. That's the good news. We've been through the worst part in terms of customers and businesses being dissociated from each other. And now the great benefit is, how seamlessly can you integrate that? How much can you make, like, the feeling of being a customer be as intimate as it is with me and the guy who runs the bodega?
Can you achieve a lot of that intimacy? It sounds like you're saying you can, but can you through the digital media? I know everybody wants to place so much emphasis on social media and on Facebook and Twitter and things like that. Can you achieve that intimacy and that storytelling?
So let me give you an example. I'll give you a marketing example. So we frequently do marketing campaigns with really big brands. One of them that we did in 2006 was to launch Audi's A3 in the United States. And we did something called the Art of the Heist. And I'll send some links to you if you want to provide them with the podcast. But essentially, we took the media budget and broke it back apart and used it to tell one story. A story about a stolen A3 that contained plans for an art heist. And we invited people on the internet to participate. So we had people from the internet who snuck into a car on display at the Audi party at Coachella. We had people sneak into an Audi dealership in Audi in Atlanta and rifle through the car to find the hidden plans. And so every time this happened, we as storytellers had to adapt our story. We sort of knew in general where the story was going to go. And then we could look at the audience's experience and go, oh, what a wonderful moment that we would have never predicted. Let's make a big deal of that. Or go, okay, this aspect of it isn't working. So we're going to rewrite the story a little bit. And like, as a storyteller, this is essentially being more like improv and less like a novelist or a filmmaker. But we did that across television, billboard, outdoor, print, digital, experiential, all over an 8-week period. And it was the most successful marketing launch of a brand that Audi ever had. So we've got data to sort of prove that these things become more meaningful. And what you end up seeing is by the time the press tells the story about it, they're telling the story about the participants' experience. And Audi is the people who are making that happen, rather than trying to get journalists to write a story about Audi. Like, here's this wonderful thing that Audi helped create. So I think it shows very practical marketing value, even at very large scale. And at an intimate level, this is what we've already known, right? This is me and the bodega owner again. So we know it works at small scale. It's the natural style at small scale. It's also more effective than traditional uses of advertising.
It really takes an open mind to do something like this, Brian, because we want to be sure in advance of what we're going to say and what we're going to do and the results that we're going to get from it, the ROI and everything. So it really takes, I think, some courage to kind of go down this road that way.
I think so. The way I've often described it to people is, hey, they're going to say this stuff about your brand anyway. So you either jump in and participate or you stick your fingers in your ear and pretend it doesn't exist. Right? But I preferred it as a storyteller. My desire is to incubate audiences, to make sure that my audiences are having a wonderful time. And I think brands are better serviced if they do that as well.
One thing we really haven't talked about that much, Brian, is the product, the service that we're selling, you know, the meeting point between us and the customer. What role does that play in the storytelling and phenomenology and everything that you're talking about here?
That's a question that I continue to discover new answers to. I could give you some examples of some startling discoveries, like that the brand doesn't have to play much of a role and it still gets all the benefit. So another project we did was in also the mid-2000s when Ford was losing like $3 billion a quarter. And any change that they were making in the boardroom, you weren't going to see on the street for 2 or 3 years. And we convinced them the right answer was to let us bring documentary cameras and journalists into Ford to witness everything. Like, open up the doors, let the sunlight in, let everyone see how seriously you're taking this. So this effort was, you know, tasked against a sort of PR sentiment as its goal. And up in the upper right-hand corner of the site was one little blue oval that said Ford. And the people who clicked that blue oval were 4 times more likely to request a dealer quote, were 200% more likely to fill out a loan application. Why? Because the storytelling had already done the work of consideration. It had already tackled the would I buy a Ford or not. And now they were thinking about buying a Ford and wanted more information. So it drove KPIs that it wasn't even responsible for. So I think this shows us that maybe brands don't have to be as heavy-handed. Branding's binary. Once I know it's about Ford or not, I know. But meaningfulness has no upper end. You can always create an experience that's even more meaningful than the one you have. So it seems like we should be putting our design effort more into that meaningfulness. And like, yeah, here's who it's from. That's the beauty of Red Bull and Nike again. Right? Just being able to put one little swoosh on something and make the connection back to the overall brand, rather than talking about the price point and features of their newest sneakers.
Without the story behind the swoosh, there's really no meaning to that.
Absolutely. And I think that's the challenge for brand. Like, essentially, what you just said is if the brand is unmeaningful, it's unmeaningful. And I think that is a very proper description of a lot of brands right now that have become commodity brands, right, that are just instantly replaceable with another brand. And yet you still also hear things like, well, is Pepsi okay? So clearly Coke has a better story going for it than Pepsi.
Well, Brian, as we wrap up here, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot. After listening to this, we go back and start thinking about our business. What are some of the takeaways that you would have us glean from this?
So the first thing I would say is if you're a business, you probably have a messaging guide about how you talk about your product. Your deck of information about your audience should be at least twice as many pages long. Too many times I see brands, it's like, here's the 50 pages about how to talk about our brand. Here's the one page about our audience. So the first thing to do is to sort of shift the perspective of the data that you're using to make marketing decisions. And then the next thing is, does this already exist? The internet is an incredible listening tool that people mainly try to use, and brands mainly try to use to talk and not listen. So hop on Twitter and see what they're saying about your brand. Hop on Google. Don't treat it as a defensive exercise. Treat it as a way to understand your client's experience. And then just ask yourself simply, how do I make that more meaningful? Treat it as a series of little incremental goals and realize that it isn't just media. How do you make customer service more pleasant? How do you make returns more pleasant? We used to be publishers of IndieWire, and you would occasionally, even though we were a double opt-in email newsletter, you'd get people occasionally email you going, take me off this damn spam list. And we'd always email them back a personal note saying, apologies, you should have never been getting this unsolicited, we've removed you, thanks so much for contacting us. And without fail, they would email back and go, oh my gosh, I never imagined a human being would answer. So experience design is a series of little choices like that. You can turn critics into allies by treating them wonderfully. And so keeping that focus, and how does media and how does marketing contribute to that goal? Because if you contribute to that goal, you'll also generate sales.
Lots of good stuff to think about. Brian, if we want to find more of your stuff, including this phenomenology thing, where do we go?
I was going to say, I have a Tumblr called phenomenalwork.com, and then my company is called gmdstudios.com.
And both of those links will be in the show notes of the podcast. Hey, Brian, thanks a lot. We appreciate it. So what do you think? Do you have something phenomenal to talk about in the experience of your business? Or rather, do your customers have a story to tell when they part company with you? If you want to spend less money on advertising and marketing and stop trying to constantly drum up new business because your repeat business is not what it needs to be, then try creating some phenomenal stories for your customers. And you would be surprised what your customers will say, right? It doesn't have to be like the Audi heist or the Ford documentaries, the examples that Brian gave. It can be something like your decor. You know, there's a local pizza restaurant here in my hometown of Waco where you walk through a phone booth with a fake wall to get from the family dining area to the bar area. Or there's a local salon that hands out a glass of champagne to customers during a pedicure. And that's simple stuff, but it gives your customers some story to tell. Okay, all the show notes will be on the website at powertothesmallbusiness.com. That's where you can leave a comment, or you can also subscribe by email or iTunes. If you want to email me with guest suggestions or questions, it's Jay, that's J-A-Y, at themarketingspot.com. And that's where my company website is, themarketingspot.com. And I'll catch you on the next episode of the internet show that's all about marketing and small business. Power to the small business.
You've been listening to Power to the Small Business with Jay Arendt, the internet show exclusively about small business marketing. Please see the complete show notes at themarketingspot.com. You can also listen to the show online and subscribe in iTunes at powertothesmallbusiness.com. Never miss an episode of the internet show all about small business marketing. Power to the small business.
Our thanks to Mary Lynn Foster of The Big Success Show for the opening and closing credits of the podcast. You can find Mary Lynn at The Big Success Podcast, BIGGSuccess.com.